This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Finding a hoodie that lasts through the season can be tough. The American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. The iconic Classic Full Zip Hoodie is the jacket that started it all for American Giant. Custom heavyweight fleece and side panels for mobility make it the best hoodie ever. And a double-lined hood and reinforced elbow patches means this hoodie will last. Born from a commitment to support the communities that create its products, every American Giant piece is made in America and designed to last. No exceptions. The result is durable clothing, like the premium Slub Crew tee, no BS high-rise pant, and slim roughneck pant that become part of your life. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip. And save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post-Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Told the Netflix numbers, I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times, I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
And here we are with this week's edition of Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock, joined by Brandon Thurston. Today, we are going to be talking about all subjects related to John Cena, live gates, average ticket prices, inflationary comparisons. Buckle up. It's going to be a wild Thursday night.
And women's sports, too.
Yes. Right? Yes. We are also going to talk about Netflix taking over mixed martial arts for one night in May as well.
And
the
Olympics.
What happened here?
Have you heard the news about the Olympics?
Yes.
Did Canada, is this something that Canada follows closely? The gold medal game? That's what this was. Yes, the gold medal game.
Our respective men's and women's teams, this is literally all our country has to cling on to. And
are these spoilers?
The U.S. has...
Is this being played in primetime right now?
I'm not kidding. My son, they stopped school today to watch
really?
This game. Yes. Yes. Really? They were interrupted to watch this game. Not a great ending for Team Canada. So, you know what? There's a, you know, this one will sting for the entire country.
The U.S. won in overtime. I did not see any of the game itself. I did see two news broadcasts, though, that referenced it. They did not show highlights. There must be some sort of lock and key around Olympic game highlights because they only showed stills. But that was a big story today. I saw people tweeting USA, USA.
Oh, I'm glad. Glad that America is in a celebratory mood while we are mourning up here.
Yes.
Have you been following much of the Olympics?
I've had it on in the background, like all things. It's on in the background. I probably couldn't tell you much about it, though.
It's part of legendary February for NBC Universal. This is their big month, Super Bowl, All-Star Weekend for the NBA and the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then it's all over.
Then elsewhere.
Then they follow up with Vengeance Day on the first weekend of March. So you have NXT taking us into legendary March for them.
Do we know where the NXT PLEs are going to go? I mean, so the deal's probably going to end in March?
It's coming up soon.
Yeah.
And for what it's worth.
Rights.
Yeah, for what it's worth, no announcement of a stand and deliver for WrestleMania weekend, and we're 2 months out.
There's no live event. There's no they're not selling tickets for that Saturday.
Nope.
Really?
No.
Interesting.
We will actually get into how well did Stand and Deliver draw last year in comparison to the other WrestleMania weekend events. We will see. But let's start off with WrestleMania 41. Brandon, we got, you know, a celebratory week. It was the Polestar data dump this week where we got plenty of gate figures, none bigger than WrestleMania 41 last year. Some people might state that, you know, wrestling has become an expensive hobby to attend. Well, folks, if you attended either night of WrestleMania 41 last year in Allegiant Stadium, and you were wondering why was Las Vegas so aggressive to bring this event back? Well, in ticket sales alone, the two nights generated just over $66 million.
Yes. So it's two nights, $66 million, according to Polestar, which is a live event trade. Why we're getting this now, by the way, is we used to, UI and WrestleTix used to go in on a Polestar subscription, but they are raising their prices as well. And we said no more of that. Well, I have taken it upon myself to instead periodically get the certain data that we're interested in, which is not as expensive. But anyway, $66 million probably does not include fees. Everyone always wants to know whether it includes fees or not. So customers probably paid in total somewhat more than $66 million. Anyway, that is, you know, let's say it was roughly even, which it, you know, it seems to have been. The second night probably had a slightly higher gate and did have slightly higher attendance. Anyway, it's about $33 million each night. If you throw in fees, let's say it's $36 million each night. These are the two most lucrative live event instances of business in pro wrestling history. If we rule out Saudi Arabia's site fee, I would say that's a site fee. So that's not a ticket sale moment. That's a site fee. This was, even if you take inflation into account, the reigning champion on that one was WrestleMania 32 in AT&T Stadium, 101,000 some odd, whatever it was, turnstile count of 81,000 some odd. This blew that away. Both of these nights, not the nights combined. I know that was in 2016, a one night WrestleMania. Each of these nights last year in Las Vegas.
Yeah, if you want to be specific, this is number one and number two. If you want to
exactly
break this down,
it blew away everything. Even when you take inflation into account, which has been substantial in the last several years since 2016, it blew everything away. Which the Philadelphia WrestleMania came just short of. Well, they blew everybody out of the water here. Very expensive tickets, $600 tickets, give or take, for the average person. And now I'm sure it's weighted by some very expensive tickets on the floor and things like that. We don't know what the median was, but very expensive. This is the most expensive ticket in wrestling history as well.
Yeah. And I mean, it really emphasizes things like, yes, we can look at WrestleMania 32, which was the first AT&T Stadium show. We're still talking a decade prior, but even comparing it to 2024, the two nights in Philadelphia, those two nights did $36 million combined. And we're talking that figure per night 1 year later. Like, this was a massive, massive increase in ticket pricing. And, you know, the immediate conclusion is going to be people just stunned at these figures. But they sold over 113,000 of these tickets at these prices. And you can certainly see that. I think it's why we couch this year's WrestleMania. I feel silly kind of looking at it as some kind of failure. It's going to be an enormous, like, it will probably be at worst like the number two or number three and four shows of all time. But this is the level that they have set themselves up for, that they want to do even bigger business for, because ticket prices are higher than they were last year. So this is the level of business they are looking to attract, and ticket sales over two nights. Like, the marker is $66 million, which is just stunning records that they are setting, that few sports or entertainment entities could be hitting these levels. Like, you're talking like the ultimate premium events out there that are going to be able to generate this on a per night basis.
Yeah, I mean, largely, I think it's our friend Mark Shapiro. He's trying to reset what the going rate is for a live event experience to watch WWE, and it's a lot more expensive than it was. So I guess, you know, one thing I can say that's not in the article from looking over the big spreadsheet from Pollstar is that what I did, I did some work to try to look at when they went back to that market where the ticket price is higher or lower, and Pollstar doesn't give us every event in WWE in WWE's year. It gives us a handful, but it gives us enough to get an impression. And what I think I'm starting to see as we get nearer to the present in the last several months is you're starting to see, oh, they've hit the ceiling in terms of these ticket prices. So I'm just dividing gate by number of tickets sold. And we're starting to see when they go back to that town, they're not raising the ticket prices again. Because I think, you know, and then we are seeing it in the WrestleTix data as well in terms of, well, the distributed tickets are sort of flatlining, kind of because they're just in arenas and you can only put, you know, 11 to 13,000 people in an arena for a wrestling event if you're going to have a huge stage. But it does seem, and we are definitely seeing it in the case of WrestleMania this year in Las Vegas, that, you know, the price that wrestling fans, well, specifically WWE fans, are willing to pay to see these events, they've fully explored what that price is.
Yeah, and we can also look at as of, so last time we spoke was the day before WWE introduced this weekend sale where they were doing 25% off tickets for last weekend ending Monday night. And the latest figures that WrestleTix put out. No. You know, the smart ones wait right until, you know, the pre-show. That's when you're scoring your tickets. But the latest numbers, they've been reduced, the number that WrestleTix is counting in terms of tickets distributed, with 35,690 on night number one and 36,372 on night two. So a total of just over 72,000 tickets distributed over both nights. That's around 15-16% off the pace where they were at this same time last year. So that's the comparison point. Again, we don't know what the gate would stand at for this weekend. Like what is the gate total when prices are up but ticket sales are down? Certainly you can see a lot of these moves that WWE is making, that whatever those figures are, they are not at expectations. And we mentioned this sale, that's a small example. The fact that all of these places within a 50-mile radius of Allegiant Stadium are not going to be able to broadcast. I reached out to a lot of locations that some of which got back to me that essentially we're not going to be airing WrestleMania. So that looks to be the case for those. And these are places that also aired WrestleMania last year in their establishments. So right. That looks to be, you know, for tourists too, some people that might be going to the city, and even if you bought tickets for one night and you're not going to splurge and get two nights of it, you're not going to have another option to go watch it in the city. So I don't think that's going to necessarily affect people's travel plans, but certainly that is, you know, some of the negativity that is coming out from those that are traveling, or locations as well that were maybe hoping to broadcast WrestleMania at these various establishments.
And as far as gauging what the prices are this year versus last year, as far as I know, that's difficult to do. There's just not an easy way to gather that data and to save it over time. And it's probably being dynamically changed either automatically or by choice. So it's hard to say, even though, you know, does the decrease at this point versus last year, which is about 10,000 or so, in that range. Mm-hmm. Is that offset by some price increase for this year? I have no idea. I have no strong sense. It seems somewhat similar, but I would think that they probably wanted prices to be higher too. Do you think, I've heard some of the reaction that I've seen is that, well, look at this massive gate that they did in Las Vegas. Does that explain why they've gone back to Las Vegas for a second year in a row?
I think it's certainly a reason for it. I think ultimately, like, the LVCVA saw just like we cited that study a week ago about where tourism is, and I think they're looking at that. The fact, you know, when you did your initial reporting on like the ticket sales, like the amount of people from out of town that made up these ticket sales, like we're talking like 84-89% on each night were from people out of town, that obviously they see this as one of the key pseudo sporting events that are going to attract people to come from out of town, that are going to get hotels, spend money in the city. I don't think the gate is necessarily like the, it's what those people are doing in their off time besides WrestleMania in terms of spending money in Las Vegas. I think that's the big attractive part of this event.
Right. I think whether this was in New Orleans or Las Vegas or East Rutherford, I think this would have done a similar gate, regardless of where it was. I think the reason why they're doing it in Las Vegas again is perhaps it's at least because they're probably going to get a site fee from the LVCVA and they're probably going to qualify for the tax credit again. And I don't know that Louisiana or other states or other jurisdictions have that benefit. And I think that's at least partly explaining why they decided to go to Las Vegas again. And I wonder if they ever will try to do this again, given that I think part of the reason why these sales are down is because traveling wrestling fan is less motivated to go to the same city 2 years in a row.
Yeah. And it remains to be seen, like what level of site fee they're getting. Like I think they had a lot of leverage in terms of, you know, you want our event, you want us to break this deal with New Orleans. Like they were certainly in an advantageous position to ask for, you know, whatever it is. Like you gave us $5 million last time for the logistics of all this. We've had our public messaging. We've announced this in New Orleans. We want $12 million this time. I mean, I'm just throwing out numbers, but it remains to be seen. Like Las Vegas was certainly, they were in, like they were the ones trying to bring this event in. This wasn't, you know, WWE had some leverage in this.
Yeah. And there's no action on my petition in Nevada District Court. But we did have Jason Umpresser submit a second narrow request. So maybe we'll try to get this site fee discovered before WrestleMania itself happens. But that's not all. That's not the only record-breaking gate that we discovered.
No, we had multiple record-breaking gates this week. Brandon Thurston, busy at work. Some wonderful award-winning charts as well to accompany these stories. We go on over to John Cena. The last time is now, and the last time occurred in Washington, D.C. on December 13th at the Capital One Center. The launch of AEW Dynamite, the former home of Dynamite's birth, now the house that John Cena commanded for his final match with Gunther. 17,121 tickets sold for an astounding gate of $6,553,883. Setting a new arena record, and quite frankly, topping a hell of a lot of stadium gates that WWE has drawn in its history up until the most recent WrestleManias and such. And not just beating, but pretty much obliterating the previous gate set at the beginning of the year with the Raw debut on Netflix at the Intuit Dome.
Yeah, at least in terms of real-time dollars, every WrestleMania until up through 2002 was less than $3 million in real-time dollars. It's beyond. So the WrestleMania 5, which is the second Trump, quote-unquote, Trump Plaza WrestleMania in Atlantic City, that was adjusted for inflation, by my analysis, the number one arena gate in pro wrestling history, because it was about $1.6 million at the time. In today's dollars, that's $4.2 million. But the Raw at the Intuit Dome for the Netflix debut broke that by a significant margin. And this broke that by an even wider margin, $6.6 million. So maybe this contributed to why those wrestling fans who watched John Cena lose with a smirk on his face to Gunther were so unhappy and treated Paul Levesque so poorly.
Well, maybe we know why John Cena was smiling. Maybe they worked out a rev share deal. You know what I mean? Everything over $2 million, I get like a percentage of, everyone was happy. Okay. That Mark Shapiro was in he was in a rear naked choke too backstage and just giggling at this.
And I went through the data that we do have. So he had, by my count, 38 dates Cena did in 2025 for his retirement tour. Not all of those he had a match on, but 38 appearances I could find. And we've got 20 gates for those 38 events. And he coincided with a lot of money being drawn.
Of Brandon's chart here that, again, you can check out in his story at postwrestling.com, 20 of the 38 Cena dates we have gates for, none of them are lower than $1.4 million. That's the low end of $1.4 million topping out for the retirement of $6.5 million. You can't, you know, give all of this as Cena, but Cena's retirement tour was legitimately, of what we know, was $80 million generated off those 20 events. So if we add 18 more, this was a $100 million promotion, easy, of what we would classify as the John Cena retirement tour.
And mind you, of that $80 million, we're missing the Royal Rumble, which was at Lucas Oil Stadium. We're missing the Elimination Chamber in Toronto at Rogers Center. We're missing the Clash in Paris at La Defense Arena, which was like a 30-seat capacity building that they filled. We're missing SummerSlam Night 2 for his rematch with Cody at MetLife Stadium. And we're missing Survivor Series in San Diego at Petco Park. So we're missing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stadium size shows. If you count,
it's way beyond $100 million, and we're not even counting the fact that in every city we had custom John Cena merchandise for that city as well. Like, just think of the revenue that this one individual was responsible for. And, you know, I would certainly, like, the retirement show, certainly, like, that's a fully Cena drawn number. You know, the last Raw appearance he did at Madison Square Garden, the last Boston appearance, like, those were all big, big shows completely geared around John Cena. And I think it, you know, you can just look at these numbers, and I just don't know if we are, like, to see something of this level. The amount of $1 million gates that WWE drew in 2025, I mean, we will not know the full number, but it's... It was probably like the most in wrestling history in terms of $1 million gates. The only thing that would be close would be the year before this. And I would imagine that 2025 was, in terms of just tickets sold, was at a revenue that is going to be really hard to top, you would assume, because they don't have this level of attraction for 2026.
And we do have a couple of PLE gates here, with WrestlePalooza doing $3.3 million and Crown Jewel in Perth. We have all three dates for Crown Jewel in Perth, which are all at the same building. Crown Jewel in Perth, $4.2 million. And do we know what so one of those shows he wasn't at, but they drew something like, I've got it in here. They drew a lot of money in Perth across three nights, something like $8 million.
The Crown Jewel show in Perth, Australia, that's what, the fourth largest arena gate in their history?
There's a table here that says, yes, number four.
So that show is, like, you could look at it, very successful. Like, this was an all-time successful show for the company of what it drew in Perth. And that was for multiple shows. They came back with Raw on the Monday, 2 days later, and did another $2 million house. So they hauled in like $6.2 million over two nights at the RAC Arena in Perth, Australia.
Right. A total of $8.24 million in US dollars, you know, more than $12 million in Australian dollars. I think some of this goes to John Cena. Like I wrote, I think you inevitably bring up is the brand just the draw question. They're paying to see something, and it's not just a W logo.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that for all of these shows, like, it did have the hook of, this is going to be the last time John Cena is in this location. And that only intensified during the last couple of months where it was starting to wind down. But certainly he, you know, this is to me not just WWE being hot. This is the fact that you had you know, the John Cena, the farewell tour. Like, this is, it's going to be very hard to, like, replicate something like this in pro wrestling again, where you're going to have a figure of this level. And, like, I would love to know the merch that they sold in 2026, because it's got to be just staggering figures that they...
The compensation for John Cena in 2025, if there's any fairness, he should have been the most compensated wrestler for a year of all time, right?
Like, it's probably very realistic to assume that this guy, between what we're going over here, like, that probably drew in excess of $150 million off of this farewell tour of just... Direct
ticket sales,
ticket sales here. And merchandise. If you throw that in there as well, and that might be on the lower side of it. So whatever John Cena made in 2025, I don't care what he made, it was not enough. That's my conclusion. Okay, they could tell me this guy made $10 million. He could have asked for $50 million, and he would have paid for himself multiple times over.
Yes.
It was a good year for John Cena. That's our conclusion here. I want to go to one question here. Can someone tell me why U.S. sports are so grossly overvalued? Because what justifies this, referring to the ticket prices? It can't be viewership, because there is no U.S. sport that dominate the eyeballs of the rest of the world. I think what he's asking here is about, like, first of all, live sports are... They're the lifeblood of television at the moment. It is one of the last few communal events that people have that are still keeping people attached to their cable packages. That is still an event where you can create it, much in the way of, like, the NFL mainly, which is just dominates your top 100 broadcasts every year. And pro wrestling is more closely aligned to that than it is to just serialized programming on television. And it's been able to certainly benefit from the fact that they have an audience that will travel, that will follow them to whatever network they're on, whatever streaming platform they are on. And those are very valued viewers that WWE has been able to, and to an extent AEW as well, they have been able to attach themselves to the live sports phenomenon that has anchored television.
If we're thinking about maybe particularly the rights fees, right? It's what's justifying it most of all is sports in general is the carriage fees. And by that's driven by people who pay their cable bills or pay their satellite bills or pay their YouTube TV bill. Like, for me, that's, I think they've got it up to $82 for YouTube TV. And that's probably on the lower end compared to what some other people pay for their cable or satellite per month. So there's that. And then there's advertising revenue on top of that. And this has all coincided with the timing in which cable subscribers have declined, because people are cutting the cords, so that the scripted TV doesn't justify itself so much from the traditional TV, pay TV package, because you don't have to have cable to watch the network shows, the broadcast network shows like Law & Order, SVU, and Sheriff Country. All that stuff can be found on streaming, and you pay your streaming subscription that way. But as cable subscribers have diminished since about 2013 or so, that has caused the most popular programs to grow strongly in value, because those are the most important programs that a viewer, you know, a homeowner, a cable subscriber wants to see, has to have. And that's what continues to justify their cable subscription bill, which justifies the carriage fee that the network charges the carrier to have their network on their platform. And in the US, it's a thing. I'm curious, I don't know that much about how cable, or whatever the analog is to cable, works economically in other countries. But the United States, for one thing, is a large population. It's a population that you can charge $100 a month for TV to. And that I think that's largely what's driving it, is that this is a relatively wealthy economy with a relatively large population. And we extract massive sports TV rights fees out of us.
One thing is we're looking at, you know, some of these figures that WWE has drawn. How much do you equate the strategy that they implemented several years ago of dialing back on house shows, and you've created this scarcity that there's many places in the U.S. that are not going to get WWE. And if they are, it's going to be a very rare event that they bring TV to your market, and that it has made these events, like, it's given a lift to everything that going to see WWE, they are not, they're not coming to your city three times a year, and you're not going to get the chance to see live events, for instance. Like, do you put that as a factor, or do you feel like there is potentially like money on the table here that, like, in select markets, you could be doing more shows?
Maybe. I think it's a minor factor. I think for reasons we just talked about, you know, the wrestling business has been turned upside down since the 1990s in terms of this used to be a live event business that used to pay for its TV time slot that would sell the house show. And if you were creating a wrestling business from scratch and pretend you could not remember anything before the year of 2026 and you were deciding how are we going to monetize this, I don't know that anybody would think of house shows. Why would you think of house shows? And I don't think that they were profitable. Now this is in the Vince era. I don't think that they were profitable. Maybe they became more profitable as WWE got more popular after Vince was out of creative. I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion about it. I think that there's, you know, they probably think that there's ways that they can get the marketing value out of house shows. I think there's definitely a gross marketing value out of going around the country and building fan memories that last a lifetime. But I think they've calculated that, well, we can just accomplish that through other means, whether it's marketing or whatever. And it does create some scarcity around their live events. I don't think whether you do more house shows or not, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference to their financial picture.
It also is one that, you know, in the larger sense, that when you are competing for talent, like, that used to always be like a big deciding factor if you're a performer, especially if you're, you know, if you have a wife, if you have kids. It's a very different lifestyle that you're talking about of the WWE schedule of 6-7 years ago versus the AEW comparison that it was TV every week, and maybe you'd have to do 2 dates a week. And that's no longer a comparison point. WWE, like, if you are a coveted star, you know that the money offer is going to be there, and you've got a schedule that it's much more in line with what their number one competitor is going to be offering. That's no longer like a, you know, something that you have to weigh if you're looking at the WWE schedule and being on the road every week and in four different cities and working matches 3 to 4 times per week.
Yeah, that's a good point that I haven't really thought of, is that exactly that they are definitely competing with AEW for talent. We're seeing them raise the issue that talent costs are increasing as a reason why some of their operating expenses are up. And AEW's rarely ever going to do house shows. They just did one the other day, and that's going to be, you know, that is like one of the four house shows they've ever done in their history.
So WWE also announced a European tour coming up. They will be going to many countries, including, they're going to do TV in SmackDown on May 29th in Barcelona, Spain, and that will take them into 2 nights in Turin, Italy, with the first premium live event in the country with Clash in Italy on Sunday, May 31st, and then the next night running the same venue for Raw as well. They've announced live events for France, Portugal, Spain, another SmackDown in Bologna, Italy on Friday, June the 5th, then more house shows in Rome, Italy, Florence, Italy, Paris, France for Raw on June the 8th, and then a Raw at the O2 Arena in London, England on June 22nd. And brace yourselves, folks. They don't turn the lights on and get into an airplane for nothing, so get prepared, okay? They want some seven-figure gates out of these, and probably well into the seven figures for some of these shows.
I'm sure they will. I mean, we don't know what these international, if there's been international site fees that have been associated with this, with their previous visits to Paris or to Berlin for that matter. But I think, you know, we're seeing when they do house shows, it's international or it's at the holiday tour. These are probably just the most lucrative times to do those.
Let's get to the big announcement that came out from Netflix this week and Most Valuable Promotions. They are jumping into the MMA space, at least for one night they will be, as Most Valuable Promotions, which is run by Jake Paul and Nikisa Bedarian. They have only promoted boxing cards thus far, but on May 16th, they have booked the Intuit Dome in Inglewood, California, and they will host a fight between Gina Carano and Ronda Rousey, the two biggest women stars in mixed martial arts history. And they're going to be meeting at a 145-pound weight class and contested over five rounds. It has no ties to TKO or the UFC. They were both, neither of them had contractual ties. Carano last fought in 2009, Rousey in December of 2016 before entering the WWE. And this is going to be a really big fight for MVP to stage. And the biggest of all is the fact it's streaming on Netflix. And it's more so interesting, the fact that Ronda Rousey did pitch this fight to Dana White and didn't go into any further detail, but it was not a fight that the
Why would Dana say no to this?
I mean, it's a good question. I would assume that Ronda Rousey and Gina Carano are making a ton of money for this, and whether
Have they ever fought before?
No, they've never fought. They missed each other in their careers. Like, Gina finished like right as Rousey's career was just beginning. So they had talks, or at least the UFC was trying to put this fight together over a decade ago, but it never came to pass. And so, you know, it's going to be one of those fights that I think it is going to garner a lot of attention, and Netflix will put a ton of muscle behind this. And I think it's going to be, honestly, like, to see the UFC put here where they are kind of on the outside looking in at this spectacle, like, that's what this is going to be. But there's going to be a lot of comparisons to see, like, what a non UFC event here on Netflix looks like.
What will have more viewers, Ronda Rousey versus Gina Carano, or the upcoming fight between Sean Strickland and Anthony Hernandez?
I'm going to go with Rousey and Carano. Sean Strickland will not be watching this fight. What a great representative of
nobody cares about women's sports, though.
Apparently not Sean Strickland. I think he'll be in for a rude awakening when Tudum releases its figures after May 16th.
What does Paramount release their figures weekly like that?
They did the first show. We haven't heard any follow-up since.
But they do a top 10 list of the most watched things on Paramount every week. Is that true?
No, they do not. They are not as open as Netflix tends to be with their rankings. But maybe they'll make an exception. I want to get the figures for Strickland and Hernandez this Saturday.
Exclusive report today from Variety, from UFC's former media partner, ESPN, that they are replacing Sunday Night Baseball with a Women's Sports Sundays. So they've gone woke as well.
Oh, no. Well, has anyone told Sean Strickland yet about this? So will you watch this fight? Will this capture your interest, Brandon?
Not
Sean Strickland. I will assume that you will have better plans on Saturday than watching Sean Strickland fight.
I don't know.
Fight.
Maybe. It depends. When is this?
May 16th. You have time.
May 16th. I don't know.
Ronda Rousey has said that this is going to do bigger numbers than UFC on Paramount Plus. So,
I mean, just by the nature of the platform, it'll be greatly benefited. Do we know the other things underneath this? Is Jake Paul or Logan Paul going to fight on this card too?
They've said there will be an undercard of fights. I don't expect any of the Pauls to be fighting on this card, but
this is an MMA show, apparently, not a boxing.
Yeah, okay. It will be. Oh, well, I assume it's going to be all MMA. I mean, they're fighting inside of a hexagon. A hexagon. They can't fight in an octagon.
That's there's like a copyright. It's a legal.
Oh, yeah. UFC will come after you. You couldn't stage a backyard event in Buffalo with a octagon without the UFC legal team coming after you. So no, there will be no octagon.
By the way, as I monitor lawsuits, one of the searches I do is on Zuffa. And despite now being on Paramount Plus, no longer being in the pay-per-view business, Zuffa LLC is still suing people for allegedly illegal broadcasts of their pay-per-views in February, in this month.
Oh, well, look at that. If WWE gets cold and starts making less money, do you see TKO doing knee-jerk reactions to boost the earnings?
What could they possibly do?
That's kind of the question. It's like, I think you're seeing like the most aggressive towards WrestleMania. I think we're going to see in this next month or two, like, if ticket sales continue to sort of, and believe me, ticket sales are going to pick up as they get closer. I think a lot of people are hip to the fact that you wait right until the end. And just naturally, I think there is, you know, the promotion is going to build for the show. But I think you will see, you know, TKO aggressively marketing this show because they have their internal markers that they want to be able to achieve and exceed from last year. And as we've just documented, those are very high markers to hit to achieve what last year did. And Las Vegas, frankly, like, we don't know what the site fee is, but they want a return on this as well. Like, they're probably looking at last year, like, that's the benchmark. And we want to, we're not bringing the show back to do less than last year. We want you to at worst equal it, if not exceed what you drew last year. We want more tourists coming here. That's the whole game that the LVCVA is concerned with. But yeah, to the larger question, like, you know, WWE, is it at its peak point? No, but it is still very strong at this point. And we're talking about a level of business. Like, just, it's very hard to just look at these 2025 figures that you put together, Brandon, and be too concerned about this company. But this is always, like, there will be a cooling down period. Like, that is largely inevitable. But they're so insulated by so much of their guaranteed revenue that, again, like, it's not a case of, like, feast or famine. If, you know, things cool down creatively, if they are hit with a bunch of injuries and they lose some people, like, so much of their revenue is guaranteed for years and years. And that's sort of been the playbook for them, that they're not going to have to absorb some big belt tightening if, you know, the creative goes down or the product is less appealing.
I mean, if you're in a rut, you always have the box. You always have a box to put out there.
Of course.
And you never know. It could be Abdullah the Butcher with a chainsaw. Could be Elon Musk with a chainsaw in that box. You just don't know. But I think, I don't, like, what could they do? I mean, I guess they could call up Dwayne, but see if he can work something in between his movie schedule. But I think this, the not only the TV rights, but WWE is figuring out more ways to monetize, just figuring out more ways to raise ticket prices, work in conjunction with UFC to attract site fees. So that they're throwing all their events together on a given weekend, along with PBR and things like that. And I think the pressure, if there was ever a pressure when WWE was a standalone company to pop a number, pop some sort of activity to please investors for the sake of a, you know, one quarter term, it would be stronger when they were a company by themselves, as opposed to a company that is now one company among UFC, PBR, IMG, what else is in there, On Location. So I think it's just sort of bundled together now, and the risk is more distributed. And what WWE could do is now like a third of what the total company is.
They're always looking for newfound revenue, and let us lean into the words of Ryan Megan, the co-founder and CMO of a very burgeoning company that is just piggybacked with WWE. Dude Wipes has always believed in meeting fans where they are in our own authentic way, and we can't wait to encounter the amazing WWE fans all across the country. We promise to bring the fun, and more importantly, the clean, with Dom in the best way possible. Dude Wipes.
How upset is Vince McMahon that he's not here to be a part of this?
Oh, man.
Integration, the content integration opportunities. He probably just has so many ideas that would just fit so well with this.
Oh, we could have had a whole no holds barred tie-in with Dookie. I mean, this was Vince McMahon's, like, dream crossover, is it not?
I think it is.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Dude Wipes, the official partner of WWE. Wonderful. Heavy integration at SummerSlam, so get ready. Maybe they'll be handing out Dude Wipes. Maybe we'll get a dude wiping match of sorts at SummerSlam. Can't wait. A big conclusion was arrived at earlier this week by way of CNN. Okay? They're still breaking news all these years later. They wrote an article this past week covering the Brody King anti-ice chants going on in AEW. And a part of the paragraph that everyone zeroed in on, the embrace of contemporary issues is part of a larger, politically shaded rivalry playing out in the industry between the seven-year-old AEW and the industry's ruling juggernaut for generations, WWE. Now, we can unpack that itself. I don't know if this is quite the political culture war that they have painted here of these two companies, but it says in brackets, Warner Brothers Discovery, CNN's parent corporation, owns a minority stake in AEW.
Yes. They were not seeking to report that, but that was a disclosure, as we call it.
Yes. Yes. Sometimes I look at these and I'm wondering, like, are they flat out reporting this, or are they going off existing reports that are out there as well?
Well, but it's CNN. I mean,
it's CNN. You would think that they have, like, this is as clear cut as of an answer as we are going to get here.
Well, I mean, hopefully what happened is the reporter said, wait, don't we own a piece of that? And then checked with his bosses and said,
Yeah. We've had a piece of that since day one, but Tony's got all the voting power. Make sure
that's what he says. Yes. Tony Khan says he has all the voting power. I mean, when you see NBC or CNBC report on certain things about their parent company, they say we're the parent company of such and such. So these are standard disclosures. Had CNN done a report on AEW in the past and not disclosed this?
I would think so, because if I can guarantee one thing, it's that wrestling fans would have found it.
Is there such a story, though?
I can't recall of CNN.
Anyway, this is what I believe for 7 years. So
it's concrete. It's right there.
Great to have it out there.
Tony Khan has never denied this.
What does it mean? What does it mean now? Does this mean this is bad? This reveals the truth, doesn't it? Well, now we know. What does it mean? What does this mean for AEW? What does it mean?
Well, I saw some very stupid comments after this. The fact that this
you saw stupid comments about wrestling online about AEW.
Believe. Oh yeah, you wouldn't believe
Tony Khan's AEW
means that Warner Brothers Discovery that owns at most a 9% stake in this company. And let's be honest.
But wait a minute. Isn't WBD a publicly traded company? They've never disclosed this in their SEC filings.
Huge violation, right? Has to be.
Doesn't
a company need to tell me absolutely
everything? They need to tell you everything. They need to tell you how much merchandise John Cena is selling, how much he's getting paid. That's why in every Sinclair Broadcasting disclosure, I would scroll to the bottom and I would find all the Ring of Honor details that they would disclose back in the Ring of Honor. No, that never happened. Even though Sinclair Broadcasting owned not a minority stake, but it owned the entire Ring of Honor company. They never mentioned Ring of Honor in the entire history. You can go on sec.gov, go to Sinclair Broadcasting, whatever their code is, SGBI or whatever, search Ring of Honor. You'll find like three filings, and they're all after the sale to Tony Khan, where they're saying, oh, we made a $4 million gain on the company. They never discuss even owning this company up until then.
The next WBD earnings call. Because nothing's going on at WBD. This could be a light earnings.
I want to hear Rich Greenfield ask David Zaslav, put his feet to the fire.
Yeah. Brandon Ross, he will ask four questions and he'll sneak in a, and could you talk about your ownership of AEW, Mr. Zaslav? I think Zaslav will talk about his affinity for having both cable networks having branded titles on the shows. He's a big fan of the time limit updates that Justin Roberts provides during the matches. Maybe this will all come about. It makes a nice segue to just give everyone an update on what is going on with WBD and Paramount. I look forward to the 10-episode scripted series that will be eventually on WBD about this whole purchase process. So WBD has announced a shareholders meeting for March the 20th. Probably to go over the CNN article and get everyone on the same page. But as well, they want their shareholders to make a vote, and they're going to definitively get the shareholders to vote on which company they are going to be sold to. Netflix has given its blessing for WBD to have discussions with Paramount for a 7-day period, which began on 2 days ago on Tuesday and runs until next Monday. So they're allowed to, this is like your get out of jail free card. Okay. You're, Netflix is allowing the two sides to talk. And what will happen with these talks? Will they materialize into a substantive relationship? We're going to find out. But Netflix, no matter what Paramount offers, Netflix has the right to match. And the current bid sits at $82.7 billion. That has at least been agreed to by the shareholders. And that is for WBD's film and TV studios, HBO Max, and other assets, minus the Discovery Global spinoff. Paramount, their last updated bid had been over $108 billion for everything. And the question is going to be how high Paramount is going to go, because they're going to have to go higher than this. I don't think they're going to get this company with this offer, but they have the right to make a more significant bid. And it doesn't necessarily mean Netflix has to increase its bid, but this is going to come down to WBD and its shareholders. Like, how much
they're willing to. Netflix says they're, well, somebody says that they're willing to.
They're willing to, yes. Yeah.
Reuters had an exclusive report today saying that Netflix has ample cash and could bump up its offer for HBO Max owner WBD if the competing bid by Paramount is higher. So they've got somebody on background telling them that. It's important to remind people, I think, that Netflix is not looking to buy the whole thing. They're looking to buy the studios and HBO Max and a few other things. Paramount wants all of it, which would include TNT and TBS, which is relevant for AEW purposes.
And while Netflix is willing to go higher, their shareholders, they just want this thing to be done with. Because if you look, these last 6 months, their stock has gone down 36.5%. It's currently trading at $77. So these shareholders, they are very nervous about the amount that Netflix is willing to spend and even go higher. But Netflix is very, I mean, they are adamant about getting this portion of WBD, feeling in the long run it will be a big gain for them. And but yeah, there's pressure on Netflix too, because they have shareholders to answer to. And what a difference
WBD
this has made.
WBD stock, like, doing great.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the cockroach of the industry is David Zaslav. This guy could fall out of a building and he'll land on his feet. Like, this dude just lucks into, I can't even say luck. Like, this guy, you have to give this guy credit that he has totally screwed up this company, and yet he's going to make out like a bandit out of this. He's got these two companies that are willing to go to unbelievable lengths. God knows what Zaslav is going to make out when this sale is completed, but David Zaslav is one of the all-time great winners in media, and I can't give you an explanation as to why, but he has won this game, whatever is being played.
And he didn't even have to go before the Senate to get browbeaten alongside Ted Sarandos of Netflix. He sent Bruce Campbell to go do that.
Are you sitting on stolen land? Man, Ted Sarandos, did he get grilled worse by the Senate or by Matt Bellamy the other day?
I didn't listen to that. Matt Bellamy?
Dude, Matt Bellamy just comes in all guns blazing and just goes at these guys, man. Yeah, Sarandos was on the back foot here. So anyway, that's the latest in the WBD Paramount drama that continues. So March 20th, mark it on your calendar. June, you can mark on your calendar as we've got a hearing. A physical hearing involving Janelle Grant, correct, Brandon?
I don't know if it's going to be a physical hearing. It could be on Zoom for all I know. Okay. This is really, incredibly minor story, but I saw there was some confusion in response to some reading of this. So this is the big Janelle Grant versus WWE and Vince McMahon lawsuit. They are still awaiting further litigation about the arbitration issue, about whether the arbitration clause in the NDA should be enforced or whether this stays in public court. They set some dates for when certain filings are due, April 1st and May 13th. So what does this say? By April 1st, the plaintiff's opposition to the motions to compel and her potential renewed motion to take discovery will be due. That's April 1st. And then May 13th, we've got optional replies to that from the defendants and to both of those things. And they're saying that they will have a hearing for oral argument in June sometime. The parties also know, I think quite more so notably, the parties have conferred regarding potential referral of this case to a magistrate judge for the purpose of a settlement conference. The parties, this is a joint statement, the parties respectfully state that they do not seek referral to a magistrate judge for a settlement conference at this time. So this is this lawsuit is not going to be settled, at least until the arbitration issue is more fully litigated. They're not going to arbitration at this time. Not until they litigate this, and not until the judge says so, or the judge says to keep it in federal court where it is.
Also, we had mentioned this last week, but today Janelle Grant was supposed to speak at the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence event happening in Hartford, Connecticut. I did ask if there was going to be a transcript or any kind of recording of this. And while there wasn't going to be any transcript distributed of what she said, there's a chance that that there was going to be some coverage of this, but I wasn't aware of it today, at least when we started the show. So we will see if we at least hear what Janelle Grant did say at this event. Like, she was unlikely to be talking about any case details, but rather just her own experiences and advocating for this bill in Connecticut.
Yes.
Russell Votes noted this, and ESPN has added it to its schedule. It's going to be airing the Royal Rumble from 3 weeks ago this Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern time in a three-hour window on Sunday night. So this is the first time
ESPN
that
won? ESPN linear. Flagship?
Yes.
Sunday at 8.
Sunday at 8. So this was a three-hour
sports time slot.
Yes. What better way to segue in? You could get the whole Women's Rumble on the show. They are going to have to edit this down because this was a 3 hour and 40 minute event, and that's commercial free. So it is. They are going to have to edit this down to this 3 hour window. But I'm really curious to see how well this does. It's only 3 weeks since the event took place. It's an event that typically, like, you want to put a show on. Yeah, well, we will see what the audience is like for the Royal Rumble on ESPN Sunday night, but it'll be an interesting one regardless.
Briefly, you want to go over the some of the AEW data that we have here that I haven't reported on in writing. I think WrestleTix has put all this information out as well, but we do have a few pay per views for AEW in here, including, we can note that Full Gear back on November 22nd. Did a $647,000 gate. That is their biggest gate that we know of since I'm looking at these as if they're scaled by gate. They're not. They're scaled by attendance. But that's their biggest gate on this chart that we know of since they went to Glasgow and in August, where they did $773,000. I think that is a new one too, because we wouldn't have had that one at the time. We do have some information here. We also know Wrestle Dream did a relatively low gate, especially for a pay-per-view of $280,000 in St. Louis, with 4,600 ticket sales. This is being rounded to the nearest 100, as opposed to the distributed count. It's distributed estimate by WrestleTix of 6,300. Anything else notable here you want to call out?
Well, we have Grand Slam Australia from a year ago did 141,000. That was 9,200 that they drew. Comparing it, that was in Brisbane last year. So they were in Sydney this year at the Kudos Bank Arena and did around 7,000. So they were down attendance wise. I would imagine the gate was probably lower too. You would assume, because
so this $141,000 for this was in Brisbane, which I guess there's a more specific municipality called Boondall. Is there a special pronunciation for that too? Anyway, I suppose there's some non-monetary value in going to Australia, but it's not like they're drawing such a big gate that it's probably offsetting all the costs that come with going to Australia. I don't know that $141,000 is going to do it.
No, and from my understanding, they're now just on, I think it's Disney Plus in Australia. I think that's their primary distribution now. They're not on television as they were.
They're not on ESPN anymore?
I don't believe so, but
canceled by ESPN?
That I do not know. Well, if it's on Disney Plus, I mean, that would be connected, would it not?
Someone will tell us.
Yeah, the Australians will absolutely let us know. Yes. Well, there you go. Some AEW gate figures there. And then just to wrap up with a few other things here. AEW has confirmed, this was first noted by Andrew Zarian, that they're taking Double or Nothing to Louis Armstrong Stadium, which is basically adjacent to Arthur Ashe Stadium. It's in the same kind of complex in Queens. That will be Memorial Day weekend, Sunday, May 24th. So it's a... for tennis, this holds 14,000. So I imagine with the setup, it'll be a bit less for wrestling, but you would think they could still fit in probably like 12 for this. So that is their
so this is May smaller pay-per-view. Than Arthur Ashe.
It is smaller than Arthur Ashe Stadium, yes. So okay.
I will be going to New York in May.
Will you? Just for Double or Nothing?
No, not for this. Okay. I'll be going earlier in May. I'm going to help Dr. Lavi Margolin with a class.
Are you? You'll be teaching for the day?
I think we'll be sharing some speaking time.
Okay, well, we look forward to that. Is it open to the public?
If you pay tuition, I think it is.
Okay, well, then there, of course. Finally, we'll look at some viewership notes. So going back to last Monday's Raw on February the 9th, it was slightly down from the Raw following the Royal Rumble. They did 2.9 million views. It ranked seventh globally, seventh in the U.S., eighth in Canada, among the 17 countries where it ranked. From there, going in order here. So Impact last Thursday, week five on AMC, set a new viewership record, 254,000 viewers. The show that we are currently going head-to-head with, they were up 5% for week five, a 0.05 in the demo. After 5 weeks, the show is averaging 208,000 viewers and a 0.04. So where the show ends up, who knows? It's up and to the right for Impact.
Another win for Moose. That's how I see
Moose
it.
Moose is undefeated on AMC. I think that's the clear conclusion everyone has made.
I have updated the chart on WrestleNomics.com that shows the TV ratings. Now we have like a shaded area that shows you this great abyss, these dark times that we were in from September 26th of last year until January 26th of this year. Is that 3 months or is that
this is the big data plus months. Panel error.
That is
era.
That is the big data plus panel dearth, where we're seeing, if you're watching in video, you can see, I think, pretty clearly visually how SmackDown has jumped after this adjustment to the methodology. Dynamite somewhat, Collision definitely. Now Collision had the benefit of doing Grand Slam last Saturday, but we're seeing this timing where TNA Impact, which is just debuted in the middle of January, continues to go up and up, is coinciding with this time where they are adding in the national advertising data or something. I think you know about this better than I do.
This is the Advertising Research Foundation, which I'm going to argue may get a best non-wrestler of 2026. So I think that this might be the savior of pro wrestling.
We forgot to talk about the awards. The awards in our discussion topics today.
Yeah, I know you want to share a lot about worst announcer of the year, but we might not have time for that this week, unfortunately. But wrestling has made a surging comeback when it comes to television viewership with the updated updated data that this third party, the Advertising Research Foundation, they conduct this study every 6 months. It's known as the DASH study, and it has a better accounting of homes that are in fact equipped with cable. The result of this is Nielsen is taking in this information, and it has had a direct correlation on pro wrestling programming that has gotten this boost after tanking during big data plus panel. But from the panel only numbers that you've seen, Brandon, like if we went back to the old method of panel only, these numbers would be even higher based on what you had seen for that 1 week of certain numbers. So this is not just replacing going back to old levels. Like it is possible that these audiences could be even higher for wrestling if it was the method we were going by pre-September.
So I've been I put together a bunch of that data that you're talking about. I worked on that somewhat today. Maybe by next week I'll have something. We can look at quickly here one of the charts that I've been making for this, which is here if you're watching in video, this is SmackDown's total viewership from last summer to the present with what we have of both methodologies. There's some data points that are missing here around the holidays and in late January. In any case, once this change to the methodology is made on January 26th, which affects cable at least, which affects SmackDown because it's on USA Network on cable, we do see the numbers go up from where they were before. And we see the panel only even higher. So still, panel only is measuring higher from Big Data Plus panel. So I guess that they must, whatever change is making to the methodology, they must have put it, this is just my own conjecture, they must have put it into the panel only methodology also.
Getting an update here, presumably from Australia. AEW programming has been on the ESPN hub of Disney Plus in Australia since it launched last February. However, it left the T channels in January 2026.
What's a T channel?
Terrestrial channels. I don't know what that is, but yeah, that would seem to be. They've always been available on streaming, but now it's exclusively streaming. So thank you for the clarification. All right, other numbers. SmackDown last week, it moved to Sci-Fi because of the Winter Olympics coverage on USA. Did 1,042,000 viewers, so it was down 29%, but did a 0.26. Overall, I would say that's by the numbers that SmackDown had been doing, I thought this number was fine. More importantly, it ranked in three countries worldwide on Netflix: Canada, Bolivia, and welcome to the party, Nicaragua.
Nicaragua. All right.
Yes. Okay. SmackDown, not to be missed on a Friday night. And Grand Slam Australia, a big promoted card by AEW, generating 561,000 viewers and a 0.10 in the 18 to 49 demo. It was fifth on cable for Saturday night. Largest collision audience in its regular time slot since December 21st of 2024. And its best 18 to 49 audience since last June. So, it was a pretty loaded up card, and unlike last year where it had the NBA slam dunk competition as the lead-in, they were going against the NBA All-Star festivities on Saturday.
The lead-in was unrivaled. Do you know about unrivaled?
No, you can.
More women's sports. More women's sports that's on television.
Okay, well.
So it's a three-on-three league.
Okay, well. They should have kicked off with a trios contest. Women's trios contest. That's how they should have kicked it off.
That would have been brand synergy if they were really thinking ahead there.
That would have put a smile on David Zaslav's face. But there you go. Overall, I mean, we'll see what their strategy is toward Australia. They've gone 2 years in a row. I wouldn't say necessarily. Like I feel like they look at Australia as something like they are investing in. They certainly put together a really big card for this show. Did a good number on television, but it's a lot of expense to go to Australia and you're drawing 7,000 people and then doing a house show to piggyback off of it. But there you go. That was our international event for AEW this month. That's going to bring an end to the show. These just zip by, Brandon. How do you like the Thursday night primetime Pollock and Thurston?
It's good. I drink coffee here at night. This is my one weeknight where I have an excuse to drink coffee past 9 o'clock for that.
Regular or decaf?
Oh, regular.
Wow, you're a machine. I drink decaf at night myself. No. Some people are very anti-decaf. There's some great decaf out there.
There probably is. Yes. I did have to move a Home Depot box out of the way too, so that the display behind me was unencumbered, because I will be moving in a couple weeks, I think.
Oh, okay. The countdown is on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we look forward to you logging in on a Thursday night in a brand new location from parts unknown.
Yeah, it'll be a new office setup. I'm becoming a homeowner.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Welcome to the club. It's so much fun.
My mortgage thing has cleared. They're ready to charge me the most money I've ever been charged for anything in my life. I'm about to be broke. It's great.
Yeah, there's nothing more fun than moving into a home and within 6 months realizing your roof needs to be completely.
The roof on this house, not great, not great.
It's usually why people move, and then they stick it on you. That's the key to
The inspector was like, right, yeah, there. You're going to need to replace that in a few years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we wish you all the best, Brandon, in your endeavors. But we are going to sign off. All of our work can be found at WrestleNomics.com, and Brandon is always busy as well over at PostWrestling.com. Several great stories up now, going through the WrestleMania 41 gate figures, the John Cena retirement run, including, all the Polestar data, making sense of a lot of these figures and really putting into perspective what John Cena meant to WWE business in 2025. And, setting several records. Never a bad Mania when they clock in $66 million in ticket sales. Like, these are just ludicrous numbers that we are talking about now for pro wrestling events.
Yes. The greatest of all time.
That's it.
Is John Cena the greatest draw of all time?
By sheer volume of
who won best, let's talk about the awards. Who won best box office this year? I don't know. Who do you know?
I'm pretty sure it was Cena. I don't have the awards right in front of me.
Okay.
I would think it would have to be Cena. No one in MMA was close to.
If it wasn't Cena, we might have to talk about that for a few weeks in a row.
Yeah. Box office it seems pretty cut and dry for 2025.
Well, it's just a decision now, right? It's not even something that the voters vote on.
Yeah, I think so. Though
that is an award that Dave Meltzer might decide himself.
Yeah, someone's bringing up Mystico here. Mystico is probably going to win this year. He had an incredible January. I mean, he had like 18 sellouts in January alone. So he's probably the front runner for this year, for sure. All right, everyone. We're going to say goodbye. WrestleNomics.com, you can go, or support at Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. We just dropped Rewind Away number 200, looking at Extreme Rules 2011. Highlighted by John Cena's off-camera announcement to the crowd in Tampa, Florida, that Osama bin Laden has been compromised to a permanent end. What better way to find out that Osama bin Laden has been murdered than from the mouth of John Cena at the end of his 10th title reign victory at Extreme Rules?
Was that being reported in news at that time, or was this like Dwayne Johnson this was advanced information that the media was privy to at that time?
We spent way too much time going into this on the show. Dwayne Johnson issues a tweet at 10:24 PM. He doesn't outright say the name Osama bin Laden, but heavily alludes. He's like, I'm proud to be an American. Just heard. Very proud to be an American.
Subtweeting about the killing of Osama bin Laden.
His story is that he was told about it and was said, Barack Obama is going to make a speech in 20 minutes. Hold off until then. He waited 25 minutes, tweeted, and then he got a call saying Obama hasn't done his speech yet. And he's like, oh, shit.
Who called him?
He said a friend of a friend. He said he has friends in high places. And if he
a friend of his agent? Who may have been working in the White House at that time.
I mean, it's, you know, you don't have to play the full like 6 degrees of separation game to get to the president, probably for Dwayne Johnson in 2011. So it's probably a small list. But then after that, so Fox News reports his death at 10:40 PM. And then John Cena announces this at 10:55 PM. And I think Obama doesn't do his speech till around 11, I believe. But that's the chronology.
It was a week. Okay. It was a pay-per-view. So it was a Sunday.
Yes. Yes. It was a Sunday night. It was the night after the correspondence dinner where Barack Obama made fun of Donald Trump, because this was at the peak of the whole birther controversy. And people have stated that it was that moment of humiliation for Donald Trump that like planted the seed. So a very monumental weekend in U.S. politics. Yeah, what could go wrong from just a joke taken the wrong way?
It's Barack Obama's fault. Thanks, Obama.
You know what? Some could say it all started on April 30th, 2011 at the correspondence dinner. But there you go. That is going to wrap up the show. Thanks to everyone. If you ever want a world politics segment, we're more than happy to play the what if game of all these different events happening or not happening in U.S. history. That is it. Goodbye, everyone. We're here every Thursday night, 8:30 PM Eastern time on the WrestleNomics and Post Wrestling channels.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/new.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.